Welcome to the Rad Cracker Podcast. Drive home with me, Graham Bradley, as I blow off some steam and share whatever cool stuff with you is on my mind. Ready and... Hey guys, it's Graham. What's cracking? Alright, let's try to keep these segments short. Today, I finished the first of five books that I'm reading this week. Today is Monday. The route went well. I finished very far ahead of schedule. Life is good. And the first book was The Wager by David Gran. I did a really confusing mumble around explanation of this book last week because I mixed it up with another David Gran book. The Wager was a ship that sailed from England in the 1750s. It shipwrecked off of the coast of Patagonia, and it was stuck there. And 8 months later, some of the men on board were able to string together enough pieces of the ship to sail out and end up in Brazil. And boy howdy, was it a chaotic mess. I'm going to withhold some of the explanation of what went on so that I can do a bit more of a detailed write-up on the cracker stack. But there was one particular element of it that I want to highlight here, and it's because I read something similar, well, something contrasting, we'll say, in Undaunted Courage by Stephen Ambrose, which was a nonfiction account of the Lewis and Clark expedition, which would have only happened about 50 years after this. In both The Wager and Undaunted Courage, some white explorers encountered Native American or indigenous and had some productive and some less productive interactions with them, but they kind of went in different directions. David Gran describes a tribe of people that were somewhat seafaring and nomadic, as many Native American tribes tended to be, but these were native to Chile and Argentina, perhaps, native Patagonians, that stumbled across what became called Wager Island, where the ship, the Wager, had wrecked, and, saw the weird Englishmen there and couldn't communicate with them, even though they tried to, but after a couple of days and some persistent attempts, they were able to start engaging in trade, and they would even leave for a couple of days on their own boats and come back a few days later with goods that they had perhaps traded with the Spanish to acquire to help the Englishmen who were stuck there and were low on food and were constantly engaged in death-defying acts of salvage so that they could get what meager supplies they had from their boat. The Indians came along, they would help them, and the Englishmen were just stunned at how some of these Indians could just jump into these freezing cold waters, stay under for minutes at a time, dive 30 feet down and come up with bushels full of urchins and stuff for them to eat. It was just like, okay, yeah, these people definitely know the territory. But after a few days of getting help from the Indians, a couple of the shipmates tried to start seducing the wives. The Indian dudes were not having it, flipped them the bird, said bye, and left. Doing what sailors do, at least in the old world, ended up screwing them and left them in just as dire a situation as they were in before the Indians found them. Obviously, don't be a whore remains undefeated. But I digress. Now to compare it with what happened to the Lewis and Clark expedition, there were certain tribes of the Plains Indians that they were very careful of, namely, the Sioux, which, would demand tribute, they were very warlike, etc. But there were others that had this notion that white people were powerful because of their whiteness, and we wanted to have some of that power, blah, 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 so Indian husband would bring his Indian wife to pimp her out to these American explorers in the hopes that having a partially white baby would then give them some of their power. Pretty messed up idea, but that was an idea that they had, and this was what led to promiscuity between the whites and the Indians, which then led to the transmission of diseases. There's a lot of talk about how the whites gave smallpox to the Indians. There's significantly less talk about how the Indians gave syphilis to the whites. I'm going to assume that smallpox has a higher mortality rate than syphilis, especially amongst the uninoculated, we'll say. But there's another factor at play. Charles Mann talked about this, namely that there is significantly less genetic diversity amongst indigenous Americans than there is amongst Europeans, and that lack of genetic diversity leads to a more uniform response to infectious diseases, you know, especially when you're talking about mortality. So, you know, just food for thought there. But Ambrose also noted that the Lewis and Clark expedition, after, you know, encounters with a number of these tribes that, you know, wanted the white guys to cuckold them, said a lot of them were dealing with eyesight issues that they assumed was caused by glare off of the river, because they were sailing rafts down the river in the wintertime. Sunlight hits it, the glare comes off of it, messes with their eyes, gives them vision problems. Ambrose posits that it's also highly likely that these men were dealing with side effects from syphilis, one of which is blindness. The point is, promiscuity causes problems. Don't do it. We're reading this several hundred years after the fact, and it remains true. But like I said, I'm going to do a full write-up of The Wager over on the Cracker Stack. Interesting book. Didn't really blow my hair back the same way that Killers of the Flower Moon did, but a worthy read all the same. Tuesday in the books. I almost feel bad, inexplicably, because I did a massive route in like 9.5 hours. Like I seriously pimp slapped this thing by like 3 hours. Should I have gone a little bit slower? No, mofo, I want to go home and sleep. Spend time with my kids or something. Jeez. Day two of my strategy, my food to work, and just taking an extra thermos of yerba mate and a few squinchers for electrolytes, and not stopping to eat, just flogging the workhorse all day long. It's going pretty good. I'm going to go home and weigh myself after, you know, a respectable grind, and then have something to eat before I go to sleep. As for the reading, the second of 5 books was completed. I'm hesitant on what to say about this because it was a book that was provided to me by the publisher, because, you know, the website has a good relationship with the publisher. And, you know, so they send us ARCs. There are no strings attached, so I'm not, you know, obligated to say good things about it. But at the same time, like, I feel like I want to say good things about it. And there were certain pieces of it that were sloggy. But if I'm taking a step back, I know what the two factors in the slogginess were. One, it's an epic fantasy, and epic fantasies just don't move fast. And two, I was listening to it on Speechify, and that robotic voice can even turn a compelling thing into a slight slog. And I had that experience with Tower of Silence, with the fourth Forgotten Warrior book by Larry Correa. And I love all of those books. But, you know, Speechify's robotic narrator is no match or comparison for Tim Gerard Reynolds, who is my second all-time favorite narrator. And he has narrated some of my all-time favorite books. So the experience of reading this book was a bit of a slog, but the book itself still gets a recommendation, and it'll get a good review up on Upstream. It's called Wraithbound by Tim Akers. It's a strong first installment with series potential. As far as I know, it's getting a series treatment. Interesting world, and I really like that there are settings, you know, that there are getting to be more settings in fantasy where the technology is beyond, you know, swords and shields and stuff. They've got flintlocks, they've got guns, they've got, you know, machinery for farming and stuff. Like, I want more of that. But it also doesn't just feel like it's trying to create early 1900s Eastern Europe as a setting. You know, it feels like a fantasy setting, and they've just moved into the technological realm beyond those analog weapons. I like that. I also like that it starts out with a whole, you know, intact family, mom, dad, brother, sister. You know, you do eventually lose the lose the parents by the end of Act One, and the kids find a mystery that the parents were tied to and ultimately got them killed, and they're on a quest to solve the mystery and, you know, avenge their parents at the same time. So I'm very sorry about that. Strong elements all around. And it was a good book, so it'll get a good, fair review. I just wish that I had enjoyed the process of reading it more. Because there are also books that I have listened to on Speechify that, despite the robotic voice, have moved very quickly. That's got more to do with the fact that they weren't really epic fantasy. So those things were more, you know, knocks on the experience of reading it, but not a knock on Tim Akers' book itself. So that is a recommendation. I did give it 4 stars on Goodreads. I'm certain that if I had listened to a quality narration of an audiobook, I would have enjoyed, the process more. So 3 books left for this week. Tomorrow I'm going to pick a short one. I do have Black Prism by Brent Weeks, and I don't see that being a single day read, especially with how this week at work is going. I should be able to knock that one out, you know, over 2 days. And then one of the remaining books that I have is short enough that, you know, if I listen to 80% of Black Prism in a day, then I can listen to another book and the other 20% the following day. Quick update on where I'm at with Sheriff Porter. So I went through the artwork last night, did some touching up, did some splicing up, and put it together. You know, in the actual PDF. So it's all formatted and laid out and ready to go. I do need to finish like the full wraparound cover, but right now I've got the front cover that I need. So the next step is putting together the promo video for Indiegogo. That'll be scripted. It'll have some lightly animated artwork, but that'll be the kickoff for the crowdfunding campaign. And then I'll need to figure out probably, like, you know, 18 to 20 short videos that I can do. I'm going to be posting a video just about every day or every work day, you know, while the campaign runs, so that I can drum up interest. And, you know, I'll publish all of those videos on YouTube, and I'll also be able to post them to Twitter. And I think you can post them to Instagram. It allows you to post, you know, longer ones as reels. I don't know. I'm going to be blitzing like pretty much any audience that I have. So if you follow me on any social media, yeah, you're going to see a lot of short little videos about, you know, different factlets and different elements of Sheriff Porter. And it's all to drum up interest in the crowdfunding campaign. So I'm excited. Things are moving there. And then I'm in the beta read process on Howling Wilderness, where I'm reading it to my wife a little bit every night before she goes to bed. And so far she likes it, but she also likes me, and she likes everything that I do. So that's not to disqualify her opinion, but she has been able to tell me when she didn't enjoy something I wrote as much. And she really liked Sheriff Porter, and so far she's liking Howling Wilderness. So don't look now, but I think I'm slightly getting better at this whole writing thing. Day 3. I finished the skin map. Boy, howdy. Let me tell you, it's getting harder to push through books that, you know, it's not bad. I was in the whole, like, I gotta get this done zone in order to keep pace. And that's a surefire way to make me hate something that I love doing, which is reading. You know, the moment it becomes like work, you know, what am I doing this for? And so I'm adjusting my goals. Here's what's going to happen. I'm not going to try to blitz the Black Prism in a day. Because I would have to, like, A, work a 10-hour day, B, listen to nothing else, and C, suck start a shotgun. Like, I'm just not going to do it. So I'll break that one up over tomorrow and Friday. And I've also got a very short little, like, one-hour audiobook of a short story that Tolkien wrote that I've never read. So I will listen to that, and that'll get me to 5 for the week, asterisk. The book that I'm punting is the second in the Grimm's War series, and I have the first 3, like, as an audio omnibus, so I'll just listen to 2 and 3 next week, and that'll get me caught up on those. And we'll go that route. That way I'm not, like, pushing to finish listening to The Black Prism. Like I said, that was sent in by a reader, and I want to give it a fair shot. He seems to think that I will very much get into that, and I would like to. I would love to be into a book, you know, so we'll see. My reread of The Skin Map, boy, I'm glad that I reread it. You can really tell that this is the start of a series. A start of, like, what is deliberately a 5-book series. Because it's, you know, we're putting pieces on the table. We're setting up something big. We're wrapping up things that are very small. And, I remembered more about the main character's girlfriend than I did about the main character. And that necessitates that the sequels will pay off that lack of focus. But, you know, presumably the main series is about the main character, so his arc can go a little bit slower. It's okay if he has, I don't know, maybe a little bit less of a presence, or at least it'll be justified in the end if the end result is good enough. I don't know. It's hard to summarize. This is Stephen Lawhead's most ambitious project to date. And while it does rely on a knowledge of history, the world building for this story itself is a little bit more self-contained. You know, there are ley lines, and there are people who can tap into the power of ley lines to travel through time, and there are good people traveling through time and bad people traveling through time, and the bad guys are starting to win. They want power, as all bad guys do, and our main character, Kit, just gets pulled into the middle of this fight, and he loses his mentor by the end of the first book, so there's a lot going on, and it's all well done, but the surefirest way to, kind of like with reading in general, to make me burn out on the series is for me to go try to blitz it too quickly. So I'm going to be reading 1 book per month for the next couple of months until I finish the series. I'm 1 down and I'm 4 to go. And this is a series that I started reading like 13 years ago and just never got around to finishing. I'm enjoying it more now. I just felt like I was kind of obligated to push through it. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to dislike this thing that I like. Today was podcast day. There's a new Writer Dojo. I haven't listened to it. I'm going to. There was a new Talkville, but they were covering an episode that I skipped on this watch through, this rewatch that I'm doing with my wife. I skipped it just because I remembered it being, like, super boring, and then, yeah, apparently one of the actors had a mental health issue, and just a downer. Like, I didn't want to read it or listen about that and, like, have it drag my day down, so hope the dude's able to get help. The end. And we'll see what tomorrow brings us. Thursday, super overcast in the middle of the day. It feels like it's 5 in the afternoon. I keep looking at the clock and, like, no, it's 11:30. Jeez. Oh, boy. Rain just turned into mush, like, halfway through the morning, and I kept trying to listen to books. I just couldn't do it. So today was a podcast and music day. And I texted Kenny and was like, dude, what the hell is even happening in the Black Prism? Like, all I gather is this thing, this thing, this thing. He's like, yeah, that's pretty much it so far. I'm like, dude, what are you doing to me? This is a 21-hour book. So everything I said yesterday is BS. I'll probably read a book tomorrow. I'm just not going to worry about it, all right? Like, just the hell with it. The other problem is I had 14 stops today, and on the second one, I took a hit to the shin so hard that through a compression sock, it broke the skin, and I couldn't put weight on it for like a solid 5 minutes. So we've got these curb ramps that, you know, you're wheeling around these heavy two-wheeled dollies, these hand trucks with 300-400 pounds of stuff on them at a time. And if there's no, like, you know, natural ramp in the sidewalk where you can, you know, roll it up into there, into the building, you've got to bump the hand truck up a curb. But if you have a ramp, just a, you know, a 45-degree angle piece of metal that you can throw down, then you can much more easily run your stuff, you know, up the curb. Well, I had a really nice one that I brought with me from Utah that I misplaced at a stop one day and never got it back. And it really sucks because, you know, the company bought it for me, and these things are like $200 brand new. And out here, they don't really issue them, and if they do, they're like the $100 plastic versions that just break all the time. But I finally got to a point where I asked my manager, he's like, hey, is there an extra ramp lying around? How do I get one? He's like, yeah, let me go find one. So he finds this old one from the before times. It's a design that I've never seen before. It's tricky to explain, but, you know, I'll just leave it at that. It's an old plastic one, but I'm like, okay, you know, fine, it'll work. Well, after my second delivery, I realized why they stopped using this design, and that's because it's kind of unstable. And it's very easy for the thing to pop up, and just as you're like walking up it, it pops up and stabs you in the shin, and it is not going to give because it is held in place by a sidewalk. So basically you are taking a sidewalk shaped hammer to the shin with the aid of a 300-pound hand truck pulling you along. So like it surprised me. Sounds were made, words might have been said, I don't really remember. All I know is that I'm pushing this hand truck and hopping on one foot to get these goods into the freezer. God only knows how I didn't drop it all. And then I just kind of dropped to my knees and waited for the pain to go away for a couple of minutes. And I was concerned at one point that I'd even broken my leg. So, learned my lesson the hard way on that one, dadgummit. I might pony up the cash myself for a $200 ramp. I mean, they also use a different model of hand truck out here, and I kind of hate it. So, they don't provide replacement parts because mine's different. So, I bought my own replacement parts for something that broke. Things are just going swimmingly, but on the plus side, I 100% own my stuff, and if I ever find somebody stealing it and using it, they'll take a curb ramp to the shins. Anyway, we are headed into tornado weather. Like, this is, like, May is the month where the tornadoes happen, you know? This is where all the big legendary ones hit. And it's been 10 years since this part of Oklahoma got a really devastating one. So I guess technically they're overdue for it. One of the few downsides to the house that I bought was that it didn't come with a storm shelter equipped. Real estate agent said that only about a quarter to a third of homes actually have them. You can buy one. You know, it's a chunk. And with how my first 6 months went here, it was just not in the cards. I had other stuff to pay for. And I won't be able to get one installed before the end of tornado season here. So, you know, we're going old school. We're going analog. We've got a muster point in the house. We text our out-of-state family beforehand, make sure the phones are all charged. We got batteries in the flashlights, blah, blah, blah. Well, my ministering companion just texted me, and he's like, you know, hey, you know, it'll be kind of snug, but if you guys need to come over here, we've got a shelter. It's like, awesome. So he's been here. He's also from out west, but he's been here for a few years longer than I have. And, you know, they had a scare one year, and his wife was like, freaking put in a shelter. Yes, yes, ma'am. So, they've got one, and, you know, he'll even let us bring our dog over, our poor little rescue dog. Sweet puppy girl. So, just, you know, still adjusting to certain aspects of Oklahoma. We had our first real tornado scare in February. I've probably mentioned this before, but on Saturdays at noon, if the weather is clear, they test the tornado sirens. And, you know, only one time have I heard the tornado sirens go off when it wasn't a test. And that, unfortunately, was like when I was sleeping in the middle of the afternoon. It went off and it woke me up, and I'd only had like 4 hours of sleep. So that was a fun day at work. Am I worried? Only in the most like bare bones technical sense. I'm not afraid for my house, but I'm not being foolish about it either. You know, we're equipped, and whatever happens, happens. You know, we pray, we eat our vegetables, we pay our tithing, and the Lord will provide. So I'm going to go ahead and post this episode, and tonight we head into the storm. Thanks, guys, for listening. Thanks for making this a success. Thanks for validating the effort as I put it into it. Hopefully the tornadoes aren't too bad, and I can stay up tonight and get a little bit of extra production work done on Howling Wilderness. Oh, also, just be sure to check out upstreamreviews.com. I think things are finally fixing up from the attack that hit the website a year and a half ago. And we're finally getting paid again, so that's cool. So definitely keep checking out the reviews. I just submitted a draft last night for Riptides for the sequel to Splashdown. And, you know, more to come. So thanks for being there. It means a lot to me that the few of you who listen consistently, you know, care enough to check in on the show and leave a comment and buy my books. Like, I do appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Drive safe. See you out there. Thanks for listening. Hope you guys liked that. Be sure to check the episode description for all the links to the cool stuff that I told you about so that you can give me money and I can do this much better and much more often than I do right now. Drive safe. See you out there.